You're listening to DraftKings Network.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extra help.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale. At MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Billy, I see in ads and elsewhere Ron DeSantis claiming COVID victory. Ron DeSantis saying that Florida handled COVID correctly or better than the rest of the country, better than the rest of the world. What is fact there? What is accurate there? Not opinion, but fact.
I mean, what is accurate is that there was a position taken by the governor of the state to kind of basically ignore it for a time. After mandatory lockdowns in 2020, Florida was famously open for business basically come summer of 2020. And again, that's for better or worse. It's one thing to say you were taking a responsible, conservative, cautious approach. It's another thing to just swing the doors open and welcome everybody here and what has happened as a consequence of that. And the failure to acknowledge that there was a risk and a sacrifice there, I think, is the truly grim mistake. And the truth is that in August, for the third month in a row, Florida led the United States of America in COVID deaths. Another 1,614 people died in the month of August from COVID, particularly brutal for the elderly, of course, in the state of Florida. And this was the third summer in a row that Florida was number one for COVID deaths. Depending on which number you go by, over 83,000 Floridians have died since the start of the pandemic and counting. It was the number one cause of death for law enforcement officers and first responders for the years of 2020 and 2021, and it is on course for 2022 to be the number one cause of death for first responders and law enforcement officers. And not only was it the number one cause of death, but it was the number one cause of death. It killed more police officers than all other causes of death combined. That is gunfire, that is cancer, that is automobile accidents or traffic fatalities, which are usually at the top of that list. And more frighteningly, from calendar year 2020 to 2021, there was a 65% increase in COVID deaths amongst law enforcement officers. We're talking about hundreds and hundreds of officers. That figure is fortunately down this year, but COVID remains the number one cause of death. So if Blue Lives Matter and you are truly concerned about people on the front line who are forced to go to work through a pandemic, as law enforcement officers and first responders were, you have to care about COVID. And unfortunately, it is still a thing, and it is still killing nearly 2,000 Floridians per month.
And so when in the ad he is claiming, and when his constituents and his people say, I like DeSantis, I like the way that he handled COVID, he did not run away scared, he was bolder than most in going the other way on this, the rebuttal is what to the way that that ad portrays him as some sort of COVID hero.
83,000 Floridians and counting have died. I think that needs to be said. I think that needs to be acknowledged, that there was an extraordinary risk and an extraordinary loss of life. At the Officers Down memorial page, the executive director has said that COVID, by the end of the pandemic, will far surpass 9/11 as the single deadliest cause of death in the history of law enforcement and first responders. And the fact that for 2 years, the position of Florida has been COVID is over and never happened. That head in the sand approach has been extraordinarily deadly. And if you're going to take those kinds of risks, you should kind of be forthcoming about it, and you should tell people, but this is what you can do to be responsible about it and to preserve life. And people have come back with, oh, well, that death rate is only 0.0 whatever percent of, and it's like, well, what about every single one of those people had families, had loved ones who are now dealing with a tragic loss. And so you take 83,000 dead people and you talk about the lives that that has impacted of that loss. And to just ignore that, I think, is extraordinarily cold-hearted. I think it's not what government should do. I think government, in no small part, is supposed to protect us, be it from risks foreign and domestic. And I think that when you look at the number of deaths and where Florida ranks, I think you can safely say that this has not been a success.
We've got Rabbi Barry Silver joining us later in the show. We'll explain why when he joins us. But before we do that, there are a handful of topics that I want to get to with you locally. I saw some renderings here of a seawall around downtown Miami. Yeah. Climate change is something that feels apocalyptic right now. People on our show are probably tired of hearing me talk about it because I can sound hopeless and helpless, and nobody's got any real answers on what they can do individually to fix that hopelessness and that helplessness. But Miami is in particular danger. We have had so far a hurricane season that hasn't been horrific, but I am afraid of the impact of the next one that comes, especially if it does so during king tide, when we will get enormous flooding and destruction. And I think Miami can feel a good deal like New Orleans does if the wrong kind of storm hits. And I don't feel like I'm yelling into a megaphone doomsdaying that we can't see in video from all over the world. So I ask you, this proposal that has a giant wall surrounding, a seawall basically, that obstructs your view if you're standing on the shore downtown, the way that the wall would obstruct any view. What are your thoughts on the billions of dollars being proposed on a seawall? What are you smiling about?
All that matters is the view, Dan. I mean, if you're buying a condo in Brickell in downtown Miami, you want the bay view. That's what you're buying. Fortunately, the condos go a little higher. The seawall is, what, about 20 feet high?
I cannot believe the number of cranes in our downtown. I shouldn't be surprised, given that we're the most expensive housing market, but we don't have room to put many more things, Billy.
Hey, forget the room. What about the resources? Every single one of those buildings, with hundreds and hundreds of new residents, conceivably, potentially, they all need sewer. They all need fresh, clean water. We don't have those things, and we don't have enough of those things, and our infrastructure is not such that we can sustain that number of new arrivals. It is absolutely unsustainable. This is a place that for most of its history was uninhabitable. Everybody should read Michael Grunwald's book, The Swamp, about the Everglades and taming the swamp. Really, the Army Corps of Engineers, who are also the lead characters in this story in the Herald about the seawall. Because it's the Army Corps of Engineers' fault that any of us are here. We're actually right now. They tamed the swamp.
We live on marsh, and they took out, just to get infrastructure from Miami to Key West and trains and everything else, what was required was just cutting down marsh, and more marsh.
So from Grunwald's book, The Swamp, suburbs such as Weston, Wellington, Plantation, Pembroke Pines, Miami Lakes, Miami Springs, all sprouted in drained Everglades wetlands. So did Miami International Airport, Sawgrass Mills Mall, Florida International University, Burger King's corporate headquarters, and a vast agriculture empire. Disney World was basically built right near the headwaters of the Everglades. The Army Corps of Engineers are often referred to as the ground troops in America's war against nature. And they finally conquered the Everglades post-war. And now they're basically back to save us from ourselves and save us from them. And they're probably the only ones who can save us. This is not a diss of the Army Corps of Engineers. They achieved something absolutely futuristic with what they accomplished here in Florida. And we're hoping they can do it again to save Florida. And there is, the complaint is it's a big, ugly gray wall. That's the complaint.
I was looking at it, and as I looked at it, it seemed to me like something out of an apocalypse movie.
Yeah.
To put a wall that size in front of what are beautiful views and the reason that real estate exists downtown.
You should get Lebo out there to paint it.
It's, you gotta tag it. It's gotta Wynwood it up.
It's so giant. It's such a giant gray wall, but what's gonna happen there? What are you, when you read the details on this proposal, what's most fascinating to you about it? Because you're talking about billions of dollars, and you really are talking about saving this area of land.
What's fascinating is the Army Corps of Engineers is here and saying, listen, we're gonna spend billions and billions of dollars, the federal government is, to try to save some of the most valuable, expensive, and vulnerable real estate in the entire world on the waterfront of South Florida. And Miami's like, no gracias, no thank you, because, like, it's super ugly. Like, who wants that? Like, pero, like, who wants that without big, ugly wall? Like, right in front of my park, I go jogging out there, and pero, I gotta look at a big, ugly, my dog's gonna take a shit in a park and look at a big, ugly gray wall. By the way, they're right. The wall is absolutely ugly, and the Army Corps of Engineers should have said, well, we're coming to one of the most superficial and selfish communities in the entire country. That's why they call it Miami, not our Ami. It's my fucking Ami. So they should have thought that, like, yeah, we're going to need to hire some artists to maybe jazz this up a little bit to make it a little bit more Miami. They're absolutely right about that. And what's funny about it is that Mayor Danielle Levine-Cava has a very funny comment, because the Army Corps of Engineers basically took this feedback and went away and then came back and said, listen, we're going to spend another $8 million on top of the $3 or $4 million the feds have already spent to do more research, to do more studying about how we can make this more aesthetically pleasing, maybe use more mangroves, for example, use more natural and organic means to help stave off the inevitable flood that will render this entire town, or most of this town, underwater in the relatively near future. And Danielle Levine-Cava says, she called it the recent decision by the Army Corps of Engineers a great accomplishment for the county. Quote, the fact that we were very persistent and persuasive and also had public input that was very clear on the idea that the original plan of all hard or gray infrastructure would not be acceptable, end quote. What she misses the point there is that the reason why the Army Corps of Engineers was so receptive to the feedback is they're desperate. They know we have to do something. They could just say, okay, guys, bye, go pound sand, or in this case, there won't be sand, pound water, you know. But they basically said, okay, we need to save these people from themselves. So yes, we'll take your feedback. It was an ugly wall, and we'll do our best to, we'll spend millions more dollars before we spend dollar one on infrastructure to actually help stave off this inevitable flood. We'll spend $8 million more of taxpayer federal dollars to figure out what to do to make you people happy about this. And I just think it's funny that, like, the lack of self-awareness that, like, oh, we were so persistent and persuasive. The Army Corps of Engineers is like, oh, God, these idiots, like, we have to do something. So we just have to go along with what they want us to do, because otherwise they're all going to drown. So that's why I couldn't help but laugh. It's the lack of self-awareness that I find somewhat amusing. But we won't find it amusing when we're all wearing, like, swimmies and on, like, flamingo floaties trying to escape the flood here. We just celebrated. We just commemorated the 30th anniversary of Hurricane Andrew, one of the most devastating and traumatic collective experiences in the history of this community. It was basically, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I say it was like Miami's 9/11, not only in terms of casualties, but in terms of, I think, the lasting impact psychologically, the PTSD on generations of Miamians since then.
You'll have a hard time explaining to the national audience the horror that was. I mean, you have an idea, but 30 years ago, this hurricane of I don't know if it was unprecedented strength, but it was close to unprecedented strength for this region. What it did to poorly constructed homes, homes that had been made on the cheap, and what it did to well-constructed homes and gas stations and buildings and homestead, driving through that the next day is about as horrible a thing as I've ever seen anywhere.
It's like a post-war, just a bombed out community for miles and miles as far as the eye can see. They also predicted that the hurricane was going to hit landfall in northeast Miami-Dade or North Dade and South Broward. And so what a lot of people did from those areas was flee to the southwest to friends and family further inland. And what happened, of course, is this Category 5 storm took a turn to the southwest and wound up hitting in these neighborhoods where they were not necessarily expecting it, where a lot of new home construction had occurred as the urban development line shifted west into the swamp, into the Everglades. And these homes were built to a different code than had existed.
An unacceptable code. They were built on the cheap. Tell people of the history of what it is that you're talking about there, because you're talking about homes that were built. It was affordable housing that was built, and they skirted a lot of laws and rules in order to build stuff not up to code.
And I think it was more the fact that the laws had changed. Developers had lobbied the county and had lobbied municipalities to change the code. Say, we don't need these antiquated, super strong building codes anymore. We haven't been hit by a hurricane since God knows when. And so what do we need to build up to that code for? And just as we have the problem now, we had the problem then. We needed more single family housing. We needed more workforce housing, more affordable housing. We needed to develop in neighborhoods that were not waterfront per se, but that were further inland, which was arguably at the time less desirable real estate, certainly cheaper real estate. And so they created these subdivisions that were structurally woefully inadequate to probably withstand a direct hit by a Cat 2 or a Cat 3, let alone a direct hit by a Cat 5. And I would say now, and those are inland, that is not coastal property. So we're not even talking about buildings that are built under sea level right up against the bay or the ocean. These are inland, and they were devastated and decimated. And I think the problem is that now we are still in this reckless overbuilding mode. You know, the joke is in Florida, the state bird is the crane. Because as you said, we have leadership in this town, in the state, but particularly this town, who measure progress by the number of construction cranes that they can count on the horizon and by the amount of our public dollars that they can gift to millionaire and billionaire developers and sports team owners to build more shit. And they call that job creation because, of course, you need the amount of effort and money and woman and manpower that goes into building these things before they even break ground. The number of inspectors and lawyers and lobbyists and architects and plumbers and what they call expediters, all these shady characters, bag men and bag women and donations, quote unquote, to elected officials. Just the development industry before you even get into construction is a huge driver. And in a community where we have no indigenous industry, where we subsist from hustle to hustle, all of this growth is the economy. This growth is what creates opportunities for graft and money, and in many cases, legitimate jobs, of course.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using Simply Safe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor, before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with Simply Safe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras, plus add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day, no contracts to worry about, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
tell the audience who Joe Martinez is and why his arrest is something that is interesting.
Finally, we have a Miami-Dade County Commissioner who was arrested as a result of a five-year corruption investigation. 5 years of investigating this guy. First of all, he is the first county commissioner in Miami-Dade history to be arrested for corruption in 20 years. Miriam Alonso, I think, was the last one. And she was like a career criminal. She and her entire family were political grifters. They would raise money and just buy houses and pay for their personal shit with it. It was extraordinary what they did. They had a real good hustle going. But it has been 20 years since State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle has charged the Miami-Dade County Commissioner with corruption as a result of a five-year investigation, Dan, and they found that he took three payments of $5,000. This is $15,000 to introduce what turned out to be a failed attempt at an ordinance that would have helped a grocery store owner and strip mall owner who paid him this $15,000. This is the worst corruption she could find in Miami.
In five years.
Actually, if you think about it, she's been state attorney now for 30 years. So I would suggest she just watches like a Miami City Commission meeting and she'll find worse corruption than $15,000. Off the top of my head, Dan, I could name several cases involving multi-million dollar corruption in the city of Miami that she has failed to prosecute. And instead, this poor yutz, who, by the way, probably did it, he's probably guilty, but $15,000 worth of corruption? $15,000. Let me tell you what's going to happen. So Joe Martinez is planning on running for county sheriff. Miami-Dade, I believe, is one of the only, if not the only, counties in the state of Florida that does not have an elected sheriff. They are what they call the police director of Miami-Dade County is appointed by the county mayor. And as a result of a state constitutional amendment referendum a couple years ago, Miami-Dade County has now been compelled come 2024 to elect a sheriff. And Joe Martinez he's a retired cop. He was an extra on Miami Vice back in the day. He also helped champion, when Michael Cohen called him, he helped champion Donald Trump buying like 800 acres of public land for like $1 a year in order to build a movie studio. I'm doing air quotes, a movie studio. And this is a guy who month two of the pandemic said, I'm already sick of hearing about COVID. This guy's a piece of work. And he wants to, of course, run for sheriff because he wants someone to pin a star on his vest and make him the lead boss, El Jefe. So he's saying that this is politically motivated, this prosecution. But the reality is that he'll probably plead out. He'll plead guilty. He'll get like a year or two probation, do no jail time. And one of the things that Catherine Fernandez Rundle, the state attorney, our lead prosecutor in Dade County, likes to do is she likes to prosecute electeds for petty corruption and then make them promise that they won't run for office for either 1 year or 2 years. And then take a wild guess what they do, like on day 366 of that probation. They file to run for office. So I think there are very good odds that Joe Martinez pleads guilty, gets not even a slap on the wrist, and then in 2 years, he gets elected Miami-Dade County's first sheriff after having pled guilty or no contest.
You think that's going to happen?
Yes. I think there's very good odds that Miami-Dade's first sheriff will be a man who is guilty of corruption, who was prosecuted for corruption less than 2 years prior to him running for office. Because Miami, I mean, like, how else should this story end? I mean, I could tell you about corruption involving the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, that should be investigated on a federal level, let alone a local level. I can tell you about corruption from former City of Miami Commissioner Keon Hardiman, current Miami-Dade County Commissioner Keon Hardiman, who himself and his Hardiman crime family have been stealing from the taxpayers since practically before Keon was born. Okay, it's a multi-generational political dynasty and crime family. I can tell you about the crimes, as we've talked about them, of Joe Carollo, which now has the city of Miami on the receiving end of a federal lawsuit that the city government operates like a RICO, like a mafia, like an ongoing or continuing criminal enterprise. These are multi-million dollar deals that involve extraordinary abuses of power and cost this community profoundly. And the feds and the local authorities alike have done nothing about it. Next week, I'll talk about some of those. Al Crespo would like if I talked about some of those stories because he covered them in his blog for years.
Al Crespo, tell us why it is that his passing should matter to the audience.
Al Crespo was born in Cuba, grandson of Pablo Crespo Perez, a Cuban revolutionary, a hero from the Spanish-American War. He is the last of the two direct descendants of the earliest families to settle Key West in 1816 and 17. He went on to spend over 20 years in federal and state prison for a variety of crimes, not the least of which was armed bank robbery. He's a bank robber. And after he returned to Miami, became a journalist, a filmmaker, a news photographer, and for the last 12 years of his life, he was our greatest gadfly. He ran a blog called the Crespogram, which is still up, and he wrote extraordinary stories of malfeasance in the city of Miami government. He was a crusader for public records. He would put in public records requests all the time, and he would hoist the government up on their own petard, and he would use their own records and their own words to hang them. And he would sue when necessary. He would take action at the ethics committee against corrupt city officials when necessary. On rare occasions, he would show up to city commission meetings during public comment and put on an extraordinary show.
Mr. Crespo.
Well, it's me again. This morning, while I was watching you all on TV around 11:30, and the chairman said, well, it's time to go to lunch. We'll have 2 o'clock callback. And I heard my pal, Commissioner Joe, said, can we make it 2:30? Because I got a lot of things going on. Well, here it is 20 after four, and my pal Joe is not here, which leads me to believe that he's still giving them lie detector tests to his staff to try to find out who's been snitching about the things going on in his office. So, Joe, wherever you're at, I miss you. You should be sitting right here. Now, to the lady who said impact fees trickle down, not in this city. A lot of things trickle down in Miami, but impact fees are not one of them. You know, there's no sense in my talking about don't do this or don't do that or do this or do that. Because, you know, at the end of the day today, folks, you're going to get screwed. So I'm going to tell you the best thing, the only thing that you do since you've been getting screwed for year after year, issue after issue. When you vote next time, vote everybody out of office. Vote the state attorney out of office for refusing to prosecute crooked politicians. Vote all of these people out of office. Vote everybody on the county commission out of office. And then organize, take to the streets, do whatever you have to do. These people are not going to look out for your interest. They haven't done it for 10 years that I've been writing about the corruption in this city. They're not going to do it today. If you want to do something, stand up for yourselves, because the screwing you're getting is the screwing you deserve for coming in here and just saying, oh, please, it's time to get over. Please stand up and take it back.
Thank you for your comments.
He liked some of the commissioners, and the same ones he liked and he supported, he would be the first one to call them out when they f***ed up. And in a time in this community and in this country where we need more Al Crespo's, we lost him this past month. And I just hope this is the cover of the New Times. It's a great picture of Al, 1941 to 2022, giving everybody the finger. And the last line of Al's obituary is, in lieu of flowers, Crespo requested everyone vote at every opportunity. Quote, remember, we still live in a democracy. Evil and corruption exist not only in Miami, but throughout the nation. And the votes of caring citizens is democracy's best protection.
Before we get to Rabbi Barry Silver, there was something. We talked a good amount about Marco Rubio last week, yeah. And there was something that got left on the cutting room floor that you wanted to mention that we never got to when it came to the undercurrent of all the things that Marco Rubio has done that are not necessarily accurate.
I did not bury the lead per se, but I definitely neglected to mention a very important point, because the reason we were discussing Marco Rubio last week was the fact that he was naysaying President Biden's plan to forgive between $10,000 and $20,000 of student loan debt for Americans struggling. And his idea was do what I did,
which write a book.
Get elected to the United States Senate as a result of all sorts of malfeasance, and then write a book and get a book advance, a six-figure advance that you can use to pay off your student loans. And so,
good advice.
Listen, it's just as good as any, I suppose. But what I forgot to mention is that on his road to paying off his student debt via a six-figure book deal after he was elected to the United States Senate is that Marco Rubio, when he became the Speaker of the Florida House in Tallahassee, he availed himself of the company card. Marco Rubio used the Republican Party of Florida Amex card to ring up over $22,000 of personal expenses, much of which was eventually paid off by him, but he would let that balance carry for months or even years, as long as he needed. So he was literally dining out on somebody else's credit card during the time in which he's claiming he hoisted himself up by his own bootstraps, which is just pure comedy. Bookstraps. Pure comedy and pure hypocrisy. And I neglected to mention that very important point that he was able to ring up over $22,000 of personal expenses, including home improvements and personal meals and vacations on the Republican Party of Florida American Express card, with absolutely no obligation to deal with the credit implications of non-payment, the interest implications. But again, I guess that would be something else that Marco Rubio would recommend you do, which is to use somebody else's credit card for your personal expenses and Magatov.
Something we talked about last week, which is the 20 felons, the Miami Herald ended up writing about this, the 20 felons that were sort of entrapped into voting and then found out that it was illegal to have voted. We covered some of that last week, but we didn't go into with Ron DeSantis some of the other places where he is going after small scale voter crimes.
Yeah, it was incredible. After we had covered this story with Matt Dixon from Politico, and we covered it in a very specific context, which is that DeSantis is aiming way low on this voter fraud thing here. In fact, the more we learn about it, the worse all of these stories are. The idea that this was just absolute unmitigated entrapment. These felons were very much given the impression at every level, whether they were in prison, they were out of prison, by local elections officials, by the state government, in fact, which gave them voter IDs, they were given the impression that they were cleared to vote, went out and voted, and then a SWAT team winds up at their front door. And these were people who acted in totally good faith. They were not out there committing voter fraud intentionally or maliciously. They weren't, you know, rubbing their hands going like, ha 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 ha, I got away with something here. These are folks who the state absolutely signed off on doing this. And we also pointed out last week that there was major duty election rigging going on here in the state of Florida. You had over 100 elderly people in Miami-Dade County who were fooled by Republican operatives who surreptitiously changed their party affiliation from Democrat to Republican. No investigation of that. Florida Power and Light, one of the most powerful corporations, a legalized monopoly here in the state of Florida, what Michael Grunwald calls Florida Pillage and Loot, FP&L, they worked with a political consulting firm, a shady political consulting firm out of Alabama called Matrix. And what Matrix did was created dozens of shell charities and organizations and secretly funneled money, arguably illegally funneled money, secretly into various organizations. They bought a blog so that they could attack political enemies who are going against Florida Power and Light. When I say going against Florida Power and Light, by the way, I mean people who wanted more solar power in the Sunshine State, because that would mess with FPL's bottom line. They're like, we have to attack them. We have to go after them. And it turns out that DeSantis, who is not investigating this very high-level election rigging, I should mention FPL, through those shady organizations, have funded what they call ghost candidates or shadow candidates that are now the subject of multiple fraud charges in Central Florida, here in Miami-Dade County. These were funded by FPL in order to funnel votes away from their perceived enemies, who were mostly Democrats, to benefit Republicans. In one election, in fact, in Dade County, she represents this district in the Florida Senate. She won by 34 votes because of a scheme that FPL helped hatch to siphon votes away by funding a ghost candidate who had the same last name, Rodriguez, as the Democratic candidate running, Jose Javier Rodriguez. And as a result, the Republican, they siphoned thousands of votes away by fooling voters with this fake candidate, basically paying off the candidate to run, no less. He is now under arrest and pled guilty to two felonies. And there is now a former Republican state senator who was also under arrest in Miami-Dade County for his involvement in this scheme. But it was financed by FPL. And why hasn't DeSantis and his elections police done anything about it? Well, it turns out that DeSantis in 2018, according to the Miami Herald, got $25,000 from a nonprofit secretly funded by FPL. So the wheels are greased and the wheels are turning. And while they're really aiming low at felons who are parents who have paid their debt to society, many of whom have been out of prison for upwards of 10, 15 years, living productive lives and taking care of their families, are suddenly back in jail again, facing multiple felonies for what was not only their own mistake, but a screw up on the part of the state itself. And I'm glad that the Miami Herald is continuing to cover this story that you first heard about here, Because Miami.
You have mentioned that. You were taking that? A victory lap before you came in here today, talking about the Miami Herald doing stuff 10 days after you've done it. Any Miami coin updates? Mierda coin.
I got bad news for you, Dan. I know you're heavily vested.
Yes, put in a lot of money in Miami coin.
Does not bode well for your future, but Miami coin is down 99.2% from its all-time high last September. It's down to 0.0005122. It was a death spiral before, and now it's kind of like slowly bleeding out. I mean, it's ticking down and down and down in such a way that it's just kind of like just slowly getting to 100% down from its all-time high. And it's amazing that the SEC has not swarmed City Hall with a SWAT team by now and taken Mayor Ponzi Postalita into custody.
No, they're busy sending the SWAT team over to get the formerly incarcerated voters, apparently. Why are we using a SWAT team for that? Why?
Because Florida?
Well, I guess that's a good enough reason, I guess. Huh?
Rabbi Barry Silver is next.
Hey, listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit, and that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
They're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We're joined now by the man that Billy Corbin describes as his favorite rabbi, Rabbi Barry Silver. You did describe him that way.
Also, at this point in my life, the only rabbi I know.
The only one. Okay, regardless, it's still your favorite. And he's a former Democratic legislator as well in the Florida House of Representatives and a social activist. So why is he on with us today, Billy? Why did you want? And I've seen his music video. Perhaps I should have said that because that's part of why he's on with us today.
No, yeah. I just watched Elvis on HBO Max, and Elvis has got nothing on the rabbi's music video. But when friend of the show Katie Fang had the rabbi on her program on MSNBC, she opened the segment by reading the very first line of the very first amendment of the Constitution, which says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The freedom of religion means also freedom from religion and the ability of the government to establish a state religion. And so the rabbi and his congregation in Palm Beach is suing the state of Florida for effectively criminalizing the practice of Judaism by way of their, I would say, ever more onerous abortion bans, which I think will get even worse after the November election that no one really wants to talk about. In fact, there are Republicans now that are completely whitewashing and deleting their campaign websites from the primary of their anti-abortion stance, of their outright belief in the national abortion ban. And the rabbi is suing, and I'd just like to find out exactly what the philosophy is here, why he's suing, what the position is. And obviously, the position is a violation of the First Amendment rights, but how, Rabbi?
Well, you did a very good job of summarizing my case, and I thank you for saying that I'm your favorite rabbi, even though it's I'm the only one. I am a rabbi rouser. And I'm glad to be here, and I thank you for allowing me to share some thoughts with you. The First Amendment is something that the Supreme Court of the United States can't say they didn't notice. They said, I don't recognize a right of privacy. It's not written in there, but they can't say that about First Amendment is front and center. It was put there specifically to prevent the type of mischief that we see today. And James Madison summarized it pretty well. He said the wall of separation between church and state was designed to protect the soil of America from being soaked in blood like it was in Europe when you fuse the forces of Christianity and the state. And that's what they were trying to avoid. And these folks are trying to take us back to those horrible days. And I just want to share with you, they have a very different mindset. They believe that the United States was in its heyday back when white Christians had their way. And remember those good old days that they look to. There was genocide against Native Americans. There's the outrageous slavery against African Americans. There were no rights for women. And the Bible reigns supreme. And they want to take us back to those times. We say, no way. There's no way we're going back. And I know that DeSantis doesn't like to hear the word gay, but I do have two words for him. And those words are gay Avek, which means go away in Yiddish. Ge avek. And if he doesn't understand it now, he will understand those words in November, because a lot of people are going to say to him, you don't want to hear gay? Ge avek.
Rabbi, I have to ask, though, where is Judaism on the issue of women's reproductive rights, bodily autonomy, and abortion?
Well, it's very odd that, you know, most people say that the only thing two Jews can agree on is how much the third one should give to charity. But here's something that actually the Orthodox and Reform and Conservative all seem to agree. And I don't know if you know the difference between the three branches of Judaism. You see, the Reform are lazy, and the Conservative are hazy, and the Orthodox are crazy. But now if you take all three branches and you ask them, what do you think about abortion? They're all going to say the same thing. Life begins at birth. We protect the fetus, not at the expense of the mother. We protect the mother over the fetus, which is actually the opposite of this draconian law. And we believe that is not a human life until it draws its first breath. You know, the fetus that I'm interested in and that most ethical Jewish people are interested in? It's the millions and millions of people in the world who are saying, feed us, feed us. We don't have food, we don't have water, we don't have health care. And instead of trying to take care of people who are here, they're trying to force women to bring children into an already overcrowded world. And they conflate the fetus with a baby. Oh, this is not a fetus, this is a baby. That's kind of like saying that an acorn is the same as an oak tree. Or if you're eating scrambled eggs, you're really eating chicken. And to call a fetus a preborn baby is like calling you or me a pre-dead corpse. It doesn't make sense. It confuses potential with actual, and it's irrational behavior.
Is the position that abortion should be legal through day of birth, or that this is none of the government's business, that this is between a woman, her rabbi or clergy person, and her doctor?
It is twofold. It's because the establishment and free exercise clause, the government can't create a law established for everybody, and it can't prevent people from practicing their religion. So what we're arguing is that by taking the fundamentalist Christian view and make it the law of the land, that's establishing religion. And it's also preventing Jewish people from exercising their rights as Jews. Now, I was a little glib about the Jewish position. There are nuances and there are differences, but basically we believe that life begins with the first breath. However, the main point of the lawsuit is this. We as Jews have the right to be Jews. We don't need people to come along and take our Bible, misinterpret it because they don't read Hebrew, and then force their mistranslations back on us. We have the right to interpret the Bible as we see fit, and we read it in the original. They do not have the right to impose their interpretations on us. How would a Jewish person react if there was a horrible problem at the day before birth? Most Jews would always say the life of the mother prevails. There are some differences. According to many Jewish people, even the Orthodox, if a fetus threatens the well-being of a mother, not just her life, her health, her emotional well-being, even the stability of the family, she has the absolute right to abort. And that's what most Jewish people believe. And that's our belief as well.
What are the details from the lawsuit that you'd like the audience to know? And what represents success for the lawsuit?
I'd like the audience to know that these fundamentalist Christians, these self-righteous, pompous, ignorant people who call themselves pro-life, they're not. They're pro-lie. If they were pro-life, they'd support universal health care. They would work with us to get rid of all these horrible weapons of war, these semi-automatic weapons. They would work to protect the planet, the source of life of us all. And they would work to make sure that all children are wanted children, not forcing people to bring children into an already crowded world. It was Voltaire who said, if you could convince people to believe an absurdity, you can get them to commit an atrocity. So it's an absurdity to say that the Christian Bible is the word of God. It's absurd. As Christopher Hitchens says, if God wrote the Bible, let's just hope he was having a bad day. There's a lot of things in there that we've outgrown. These people actually believe the absurdity that this is God's word. And because of that, because their minds have been hijacked by fundamentalist Christianity and they're no longer able to think rationally and their ethical moral compass has been completely distorted, they are now ripe for the picking of a charlatan like a Trump or a DeSantis or anybody else. They're dangerous. And these are the very people the founding fathers wanted to warn us against. They saw what happened in Europe, pogroms, inquisitions, and endless wars, the witch trials. The point of the lawsuit is this. We will fight back against people who are trying to impose their misguided views of the Bible on us. This is just the beginning, but it's enough. We will fight back. And this is a battle, not just for Jewish people. It's a battle for Jews and for other Christians who don't share their view. It's for Muslims, it's for Hindus, and it's for atheists. Atheists who place their faith in reason, in science, in goodness, in kindness, not in fairy tales and fathers in the sky who demand absolute obedience in the sky. And there are charlatans on earth who demand absolute obedience of the mind. This lawsuit is fighting them head on. I'm sorry to say that most of the establishment is not interested in this battle. They want to approach it with kid gloves. They want to say, oh, they have the right to believe the way they want. And these people are running our country into the ground and they need to be opposed. Somebody needs to tell them, you are not moral. You are not self-righteous. You are not more moral than the rest of us. The Bible actually should be used to promote love. And my father used to say that religion should build bridges of understanding and knock down walls of separation. They want to create a wall between them, who they think go God's way, and everybody else who they think are so immoral and so diabolical that they don't have the right to make these moral decisions for their own. We do, and we will fight back.
What represents success for the lawsuit?
Success would be an injunction declaring HB 5 unenforceable, unconstitutional, and of no legal effect. We want the law thrown out.
Rabbi, thank you for making the time for us. We do appreciate it.
It's an honor to be on your show. You guys are doing a great work, and thank you very much for allowing me to share a few minutes.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Live long and prosper.
Billy, before we get out of here for the week, I know you've been wanting to talk for a couple of weeks now about the music in your Cocaine Cowboys documentary, the music by Pitbull, correct? It's up for an award? Do I have this wrong?
No, unfortunately, Pitbull did not get a nomination, though he certainly deserves one. But it got a nomination for, I think, Best Original Score. And it's up against Lin-Manuel Miranda and Encanto. I don't think that gives us much of a chance. But the Amahin Awards, dedicated to honoring the positive portrayal and creative excellence of Latinos, Latinas, and Hispanics, and Carlos Jose Alvarez, who is our composer, who wrote about, holy shit, like over 5 hours of music for this 6-part documentary and did just an absolutely spectacular job. And it is well earned and well deserved. And my tip of the hat to him.
To celebrate Hispanic music representation,
positive portrayals
of drug lords and cigarette boats and a 6-part series of criminal malfeasance celebrated through song.
But enough about the Miami Hurricanes.
I'm glad we were able to punctuate because Miami, a cheap shot, total cheap shot, Roy. Like that, the Miami isn't even that anymore. The Miami Hurricanes are so far from the cocaine heyday.
Such a shame.
Of excellence and highs in the standings and in the nightclub bathrooms.
Chris Ball is busy yelling at players for taunting now.
Yes, this is not the Miami of now. Anyways, Billy, congratulations. Imagen is the award. I think you're making it extra gringo. Imagen.
Did I put the accent in the wrong place?
I think it's Imagen, the Imagen Awards. Regardless, you are contributing to poor stereotypes for Latin people through song. Congratulations.
Not Carlos Jose Alvarez, who is an extremely gifted and brilliant Cuban-American composer.
You smear my people with your song and your stereotypes. You should not win awards. You should be criticized.
I wasn't nominated.
For smearing my people.
Oh, actually, that's not true. We won a Murrow. We won an Edward R. Murrow Award for Cocaine Cowboys, Kings of Miami.
Congratulations.
You go from I wasn't nominated to I won an Edward R.
Not for
Murrow
an
Award.
I wasn't nominated for an Amahin Award. Carlos Alvarez was, and he deserves it. I don't think he's going to beat Lin-Manuel Miranda for Encanto, but it's amazing that Encanto and Cocaine Cowboys, the Kings of Miami, were nominated in the same category for anything.
We'll talk to you again next week.
Cocaines.
Good night and good luck.
Good night and good cock?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ay, Dios mío.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using Simply Safe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor. Before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with Simply Safe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras, plus add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, no contracts to worry about, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Hey listeners, it's Mike Ryan, and I've changed a lot over the course of 20 years that you've known me. I've gone from unlikable to, well, my hair has changed. But my point is, while a lot's changed over our relationship, there's one thing that hasn't changed one bit, and that's a great taste of Miller Lite. Another thing that hasn't changed is that it's less filling. So what's the best thing about the original light beer? Miller Lite has sparked this debate way back in 1975, and we still haven't settled it. They keep it simple. It's got undebatable quality, great taste, 96 calories, you know all those things. It's a beer that strips everything away that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. But with Miller Lite, you don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. It's both those things. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extrahelp.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.